Yes, so we were going over the avodah of Yom Kippur. And again, it would be impossible to go over every single detail because basically we'd have to do Maseches Yuma B'Iyun. But I just want to go over what was done. Remember, the Kohen Gadol went to the mikveh 5 times on Yom Kippur. And he switched his garments 5 times, going from gold, which is his standard garment, to white, to gold, to white, to gold. Right? And each time he had to go to the mikveh. So I just want to go over what he went through, what he did at each stage. And what's interesting is that, you know, there are machloksim in the Gemara and in the Rishonim what he did. And this is actually reflected. People don't pay attention, unfortunately, because people, you know, piyutim b'chlal, piyutim anyway, are written in a very poetic language. I mean, I'm sure you notice that, that the regular tefillos are a little easier to follow. When we get to the poetic editions of the Middle Ages, such as Kinos, Selichos, and on Yamim Naraim, we have what are called Piyutim. So they're hard because they allude to Midrashim, and they're written in rhyming forms, and sometimes even new words are made up. You know, there were many, many Paitanim, but the greatest of the Ashkenazic Paitanim was a person called Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. And Rabbi Elazar HaKalir writes in an extremely obscure style. In fact, the Ibn Ezra, who was a Paitan himself, literally in the middle of his parish of Kohelis, goes on a diatribe against Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. He criticizes. And the Ibn Ezra was a Sephardi, and indeed the style of the Sephardic Piyutim is actually much simpler than the Ashkenazic Piyutim. The Ashkenazic Piyutim are very convoluted and complicated. The Sephardic Piyutim are in a much purer, simpler Hebrew. So, you know, you could pick which you like. I mean, people have different likes, so to speak. But the Ibn Ezra very much favored the more clear grammatical Hebrew. Now, I had mentioned that the Seder Avoda, which we read, this is the order of the Avoda, is really a piyut. It's based on the Mishnah and the Gemara, but it's a poetic rendition of all of these steps. And there are at least 2 versions. Actually, there are like 100 versions, but the 2 primary versions are Ashkenaz and Sfard. And once again, the Ashkenazic version, which we read, is harder to translate. The Sfardic is easier. But I have to give Sfardim credit as well that it's also halachically more accurate. There are some differences in Ashkenaz and Sfard. And the Sfard Aveda is halachically more accurate, which is why I mentioned that there were some Ashkenazic Gedolim who davened Ashkenaz, but they still recited the Sfard Avoda. Now, no, they don't skip those piyutim. The yeshivas skip piyutim because since they really are an optional part of the davening, so they want to have more time for Shmon Esrei. If you're like a Yeki. You know, Yeki says page 1 to page 1500. It's every page in the Machlan. So, by definition, you have to go pretty fast. But the one thing that all yeshivas say, all the piyutim of the Seder Avodah, I'm not sure what. I mean, to say the Seder Avodah, that's a chiyuv gomor. But there are piyutim after the Seder Avodah connected, which are just poetic, asking Hashem to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And every yeshiva says all the piyutim of the Seder Avodah. Well, that was a discussion. That was a discussion at the time of the Rishonim. The Piyutim were written in the time of the Gaonim and the early Rishonim. And the Rishonim already discuss whether there are issues of Hefsek, and they conclude that there isn't, to Tzorech Tefillah. But let me point out to you that the Gra was not in favor of a lot of Piyutim. For example, we recite, right, Tefillas Geshem and Shmini Atzeres, and Tefillas Tau on the first day of Pesach, that's when we transition from Geshem to Tau. So you may remember, that both Ashkenazim and Sfardim in Chutz La'aretz have a prayer for Geshem and Tau after the Chazan begins the repetition of Shmon Esrei. And yet, the Minhag in Yerushalayim is that it is said after Kaddish, before the silent Shmon Esrei. Now, that's not an Ashkenaz or Sfard thing. That is the sheet of the Gra, that you try to be mamayet in piyutim in the middle of Shmon Esrei, so you put it before. But the Gra says Yavam Naram is actually a little different. We allow a certain thing. But that's why, for example, if you look in the Machzor, you will see piyutim in the middle of Birchos Kriyashma. Other places as well, which we don't say at all. In other words, we only say piyutim, some piyutim, in Chazaras Hashatz. But There are piyutim all over the place, Birkas Kriyat Shema, etc. And in fact, not just Yom Maran. If you would go back, I mean, you can't even find it in the Siddur anymore. But the Paitanim wrote piyutim like for every single Shabbos. Parshas Shabbos Chayisara, there were piyutim about the parsha and everything else. They're virtually extinct. You can't find them. They're only in museums or scholarly masorim and the like. Dalit Parshios, that you can find. Some people still say Yotros for the Dalit Parshios, which are the piyutim for the Shkolim Zohar, Para and Chayish. But I will point out again. I don't know about the Arayda, not about piyutim generally. That you see Rashi. You can come up with 25 Mara Makaimis in Rashi, in Tanakh and in Shas, where he quotes the piyutim of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. So Rashi obviously held to these piyutim, and he quotes them as a source for many, many, many things of other Rishonim as well. Okay. So the Seder Avayda is a piyut, but it is a piyut that's a bit more mandatory because the Gemara itself indicates we're mechuyev to describe the Avayda. Now, the Ashkenazic version begins with Amitz Kalach, God who is mighty of strength. The Sephardic version is Atakonanta. The author of Amitz Kalach was a poet, this is before Rashi's time already, Meshulam the Rebbe Kolonimus. And you can actually find his name in the middle of the piyut, spelling out certain lines. The author of Atakonanta goes by the interesting name Yossi ben Yossi Kohen Gadol. Now, there's a bit of a machlokas. Okay, Yossi ben Yossi, and I'm going to Sephardim, can name a child after a father, right? That's okay. But what is the appellation Kohen Gadol? So some people assume that Atokonanta is so ancient, so old, that it was actually written by a Kohen Gadol who did the Avodah himself. There's Yossi, which of course would make it Mamish from the time of the Beis Hamikdash, as opposed to Meshulam Bar Kolonimus, which is like the 900s or the 800s or something. Other people say Kohen Gadol doesn't have to mean he was a Kohen Gadol. It means he was called the Great Kohen, the Chachov Kohen, right? And therefore it's not so much earlier. But what's a little complicated is that the Atakonanta Piyut, which is the Sephardic Seder Avoda, does come in two versions. There is an Edut HaMizrach Atakonanta, and then there's a regular Nusach Sfarad, like Hasidic Atakonanta. And it's 80% the same, but 20% different. And the people that have studied Amitz Kalach, Sfardi Atakonanta, and Edut HaMizrach Atakonanta have come to the halachic conclusion that the Edut HaMizrach Atakonanta is halachically the closest to the halachas of Avoda that is laid down by the Rambam. Now again, this is really an area for specialists, meaning I'm going to mention a few differences just so you'll be aware of it, but to go through every difference, there are like 50 differences. Most of them are relatively small detail that you wouldn't even notice, but as I go through this, I'll mention some halachic differences. Okay, so back to the Avodah. Kohen Gadol is up all night because we don't want him to have a seminal emission that would disqualify him from the service. Okay, so he's pretty tired. But he can't start the service in the temple till the crack of dawn, because korbanos can only be shechted in the day. So, at the crack of dawn, he goes to a mikveh. Now, this mikveh is not located in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash itself, because for a very simple reason. No one, even during the year, is ever allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash, or the Azara, the courtyard, until they go to a mikveh. So, obviously, the Kohen Gadol cannot go into the Azara to go to a mikveh. So the first immersion of the Kohen Gadol is in a mikveh that is on top of one of the gates, right? The Beis HaMikdash, the courtyard has gates. So there's either 7 gates or 13 gates. It's a machlokas exactly how many gates there were, how do you count the gates. And the gate that the Kohen Gadol goes to, interestingly, is called Shar HaMayim, because on Sukkot, that's the gate to which they would bring the water from the Shiluach to pour on the altar. But the Shar HaMayim gate has like a roof. You could, inside the gate, imagine like in the old city, right? You could climb a staircase. And on the roof of the Shar HaMayim, it's kind of a double entendre, there was a mikveh. And the gates don't have the holiness of the Azara. So therefore, the Kohen Gadol would have his first tevilah on the rooftop mikveh of the Sharamayim. He would then go down, he would put on his golden garments, which is his uniform of the whole year, the breastplate and the like. After he would put on his golden garments, he would wash his hands and feet, meaning he would, the way it is, you have to be a little dexterous, he would kind of you have to bend down a little bit. He would put his hand on his foot and his hand on his foot. And normally, the water would be poured from the kior, which was the big basin. On Yom Kippur, they would take a special gold pitcher that they would fill up from the kior, and somebody would pour the water over the Kohen's hands and feet. So the three steps are, they have to follow this order. Number one, go to the mikveh. Number two, the order would have to be, yes, that's right. Go to the mikveh, put on his gold garments, and then sanctify his hands and feet, right? That would be after he put on the gold garments. Okay. So, in this first act, we'll call this act one, right? This is a play in five acts. In this first act, he doesn't do any Yom Kippur stuff. He essentially does the avoda that is done the whole year. He shechs the Korban Tamid. He sprinkles the blood of the Korban Tamid. He puts the, actually because it's an ola, all of it is burnt on the altar. He puts the fats and all of the meat on the altar. In addition, the menorah has seven lamps that he has to replace with new oil. And the way this is done, according to halacha, is he replaces the oil in five of the lamps. He then brings the daily incense. And then he does the two other lamps. In other words, the way the halacha is, based on a drasha, the hatavas haneros of the menorah is interrupted in a 5-2 setting, and it's interrupted by haktaras haktaras. Now, this is not Yom Kippur haktaras. This is not in the Kodesh Haktarjan. This is outside. So the two are the most eastern ones, meaning the menorah is on the southern wall of the Beis HaMikdash, going east-west. So the five westerly, he's Meitiv first, and then he brings the Ketiris of Shachris, and then he is Meitiv the other two. In addition, he brings the Musafin, of most of the Musafin of Yom Kippur, which again, these are Yom Kippur Korbanos, but they're not Kodesh HaKodeshim Korbanos. These Musafin are one bull, seven lambs, and keep in mind that the Tamid and the Musaf all have flour offerings and wine offerings. There's a lot that you do there because the Korban Tamid has a Mincha and Nesachin, and the Par has a Mincha and Nesachin, and the seven lambs have a Mincha and Nesachin. Right? So there's a lot of stuff that he has to be. And if it's Shabbos, he would also do the Musaf of Shabbos with the Mincha and the Nesachin. And if it's Shabbos, he would also have to be Maktir frankincense to be able to have the Lechem upon him. Now, of course, this is interesting. If Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos like this year, now obviously the Lechem upon him cannot be eaten on Yom Kippur, but it can be eaten after, right? Because Lechem upon him can be eaten a day and a night. So the problem is, when Shabbos is Yom Kippur, they only have that night, but they still have to bring, right? So this is all he did. He did quite a lot, right, already. In other words, the Tamid, and the Mincha of the Tamid, and the Nesachim of the Tamid, and the Hatavas HaNeiros. The menorah is not lit, but the menorah is not lit in the morning. The menorah is lit in the evening. But this is called Hatavas HaNeiros, new wicks and fresh oil. Hatavas HaNeiros. So he does Hatavas HaNeiros, he does Ketores, he does Musafim, he does the Menachos, he does the Nesachim, and if it's Shabbos, he does the Musaf of Shabbos with the Menachos and the Nesachim, and he is also Makdir, what is called the Lavona, the Bazichei Lavona, the spoons of frankincense, which will allow the Lechem Hapanim, the showbread, to be eaten, and he also has to set up the new showbread, because the old Lechem is removed from the Shulchan, And the new lechem, which of course had to be baked before Yom Kippur, is put on the shulchan. All of this is round one. So round one is pretty busy, but round one is not in the Kodesh HaKodashim, and as a result, he is doing the Avodah in Big Day Zohav, not in Big Day Lavan. Yeah.
With the menorah in the 5 and 2, because more so that Ner Ma'arav is doing the...
Yeah, yeah, so here's the thing. That's correct. The definition of Ner Ma'arav is second from the east.
Right. Yeah. I was just wondering if there was any connection between why, between the Ner Ma'arav was living separate.
No, that actually is not connected. Meaning to say, this halacha, that's a 2 and a 5, that existed at all times, even when Klal Yisrael was not zeicha to the miracle of Ner Ma'arav. Now, when we were zeicha to the miracle of a candle never going out, so the procedure of Hatavas and Eris was a little different. When they were mativ the two, which would include the Ner Ma'arav, they would only be mativ the furthest eastern one, and they would let the second one burn until nightfall, when they would have to extinguish it and then be made to it and light it. It had to be lit every day.
They would have to extinguish it.
They would have to extinguish it. It never went out by itself, meaning it lasted more than 24 hours. In other words, even with Hanukkah, by the way, even with Hanukkah, they had to extinguish the menorah every day, because you have to light the menorah every day. There was no candle that just kept on burning. But as I say, this halacha of 2 and 5 is not connected directly to the Ner Ma'arav. Okay, so the Kohen Gadol has finished round one. After he finishes round one, so now this is a halacha like this. He is mechuyev to be makadesh yadayim v'raglayim before he takes off his big day kahuna, and after he puts on the new uniform. Right. So the first time he only did it after he put on the new uniform, because the clothes he took off were not sanctified. But now, he's Makadesh Yadayim V'Raglayim, again from the picture, takes off his golden garments, goes to the mikveh, but this time the mikveh is a different mikveh. It's a mikveh located in the Azariah itself, because he's now in the state of Kedusha, puts on simple, pure, white linen garments, sanctifies Yadayim V'Raglayim. So far we have 3 sanctifications, right? All together. And now he is ready for the primary special avodos of Yom Kippur. So the first korban that he has is, he has a bull. Now this bull does not belong to Klal Yisrael. It is not purchased by the Machzus HaShekel. This is a personal korban that belongs to the Kohen Gadol himself. It's a personal korban. It is not a kapara for Klal Yisrael, but the concept is that before the Kohen Gadol is able to be a vehicle of atonement for Klal Yisrael, he has to be in a state of forgiveness. So he takes the para. Where is he standing now? He is actually standing in the courtyard. He's not even in the heichal. He's in the courtyard, the azara of the Beis Hamikdash. He puts his hands on the head of the para, of the par rather. And he recites a confession. And the confession is asking Hashem to forgive his aveiros and the sins of his wife. That's all. Nobody else. And he says, Ana Hashem. Now, when he says Hashem, Hashem is what the Mishnah says. Hashem actually means he says the Shem HaMafayrish, the name of Hashem that we never pronounce. That's why we say Hashem. If we would just say Ado, you know, Shem Ados, people would think, you know, that's what he said. We say Hashem because he says the Shem HaMafarish. So he says, so what does he say? Ana, please Hashem, Shem HaMafarish. Chatasi avisi pashati. Chatasi is shogeg. Avisi is mazed because of taiva. And pashati is mazed out of rebellion and lahachas. Right? Ani ubesi. I and my home, which is really just including his wife. Now then it says, so the first one is Ana Hashem. The second is Ana Ba-Shem. Ba-Shem means with the Mida of infinite Rachamin that is in the Shem HaMafarish. This is the second time he said the Shem HaMafarish. Kaperna, give atonement, Lechatayim, Lavanos, Lapshayim, Shechotisi, Shavisi, Bishepashati, Right? And then he quotes the pasuk in his vidoy that says, Ki bayayim hazeh yechaper aleichem. On this day, God will give you atonement. The tireschem to purify you mikol chatoseichem lifnei Hashem. Shem on Mepharish the third time. Now, the pasuk ends, lifnei Hashem kitoru. In front of God, you will be purified. But what happened is the following. The Kohen Gadol has said the Shem HaMepharish three times. And when he got to the last one, Lefnei Hashem, he would draw it out. You'll see why. And when he would draw it out, when people heard the Shem HaMepharish, they bowed down on their knees, as we do in Shul to this very day. And they said, in recognition of the Shem HaMepharish, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Liolom Voed. And because the Kohen Gadol was prolonging the last Hashem, they had said Baruch Shem, and only after they finished Baruch Shem, the Kohen Gadol then said the last words. It comes out like a bracha. Titaru, may you be purified. See how it worked? In other words, Lifnei Hashem, and they bow down, Baruch Shem, Kavod, Malchus, Olam Voed. The Kohen Gadol then finishes the pasuk, Titaru. Now, there's a bit of a question here. How many times, we bow down only once, as a Zecher LeMikdash. How many times did they bow down in that Vida? Because say Baruch Shem, because after all, the Kohen Gadol said the Shem HaMepharish three times. So some actually learned that they bowed down every time in that paragraph. Others say they were able to wait until the end of the paragraph. And they only bowed down once and said, Baruch Shem. Okay. All right, so that's step one. Vidui on the par. Still, not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's just in the Azari, he's in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Step two is now choosing two goats. Now, these goats are not a private offering. They're going to be the korbanos on behalf of Am Yisrael. One goat is going to be... blood is going to be brought in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The other goat is the famous scapegoat that's entered the English language, that's going to be thrown off a mountain, that carries with it the sins of Am Yisrael. That's called the Sa'ir HaMishtaleach, the goat that's going to be sent off. Now that itself is a great, great mystery. In fact, the Torah does not call it Sa'ir HaMishtaleach. The Torah calls it the Sa'ir LaZazel. Chazal call it Sa'ir Mishtaleach, and I would suggest that Chazal had a reason. Sa'ir la'Azazel, quite literally, means Azazel are demons. So, if you read it literally, Sa'ir la'Azazel is a goat that is offered to the demons of the desolate wilderness, so they will not destroy you. Now, taken literally, that sounds mamish like idolatry. You're bringing korbanos to demons. So Chazal just call it the goat that you send away. But the Ramban says, to understand the Sa'ir Mishtaleach really depends on the wisdom of Kabbalah. But essentially, the message is that you're not giving a korban to the demons, but rather the Ramban calls it a shochad l'satan. It is treated as a bribe to the satan, meaning the concept is that as we get closer and closer to Hashem, the kochos of evil try to stop us. And the Zohar gives the example that if you're attacked by a vicious dog, you throw the dog a piece of meat. In fact, burglars know this. Burglars often carry raw meat in their pocket. So if a dog attacks them, they throw the dog meat, and the dog gets off their back. Although, what do they say? They say that Labrador retrievers are awful watchdogs because... the burglar comes in and they just lick the burglar, play with the burglar, whatever it is. They don't, they like everybody. But the Ramban says the Sa'ir HaMishtaleach is a sheichad l'satan, like throwing meat to a dog. Now, I'm not sure if that explains very much. It still means you're giving the korban to the demon. But it has, again, very, very deep meanings. Rav Gessler suggests that it's really a psychological dimion, a psychological analogy of how a person should do tshuva. And that is, when you do tshuva, you can't decide to destroy the Yetzirah totally, because then he'll fight back. You have to, in other words, an example would be, Let's say a person says, I will never speak a word of Lashon Hara the rest of my life. As soon as he makes that Kabbalah, he's going to have an unbelievable taiva to speak the speak Lashon Hara. So the idea of a Sheikhad L'Sata means you take on a Kabbalah that is giving the Yetzer Hara a certain power over you. So you'll say, for example, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara on Shabbos. So that the Yetzer Hara will let you do, because you're not fighting him the rest of the week. But the idea is, once you develop a spiritual koach, right, then you'll be able to beat the Yetzer Hara the rest of the time as well. That is what Rav Dessler uses psychologically to explain the musag of a Sheikhad L'Satan. Okay. But be this at night, No, it's a Sheikhad, because what you're doing is you're bribing the Satan by giving the Satan the impression that you're conceding to him in some ways. In other words, it's a ritual that brings out that idea. Now, at this point, though, you're not bringing the korban yet. At this point, you simply take two goats, and the goats are identical. They have to be the same size, the same age, the same color. And one goat will be called the goat for Hashem, and the other goat is the goat for Azazel. And they have to be chosen by lottery. By lottery, and there is a belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is controlling this lottery as to which goat would be designated.